Stephanie Alexander is one of Australia's most prominent food educators and personalities. Her 50-year career includes being the owner-chef of several restaurants, the author of books and countless articles about food. She's been awarded the Order of Australia and has done groundbreaking work in creating the Stephanie Alexander Kitchen Garden Foundation, particularly working with children and schools to get them into gardens and get them cooking nutritious food. Home is Stephanie Alexander's 19th cookbook, and it contains more than 200 recipes as well as 10 essays. It's a reflection on the people, places, experiences and ingredients that have contributed to her joy of food. Well, with Australia's National Day coming up on Wednesday and New Zealand enjoying glorious summer weather, we'll talk through a couple of recipes good for summer gatherings as well. Stephanie, good morning. Welcome. Lovely to talk again.
Good morning. Lovely to talk too.
Well, incredible career, as we said. Restaurants, books, the foundation. What's the essence of this new book, Home? What are these essays about?
Well, I thought it was a lovely opportunity, and I was encouraged by my publisher to be reflective. I was busy saying this will probably be the last book I write, but I must say I have said that before, but nevertheless. And so I did take the opportunity of exploring my favourite food writers, reminiscing about some great markets I've been to, wondering what's going to happen next, and reflecting on these strange times we're living in. So I really enjoyed writing those essays, and I've had some great feedback from readers. And I think it just reflects the things that keep me going, really, the things I'm really passionate about. And helps explain the stories behind the recipes, I hope.
Well, you were writing it during those strange times as well. And they've been reflective times for everybody about the things that truly matter in life. And that brings us to food. We mustn't underestimate its importance as a source of nourishment for mind and body, because far too many miss out on that one way or another. But it is many more things as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I believe it's the single thing that can give joy to everyday living for almost everybody. I mean, we know there are some people who are in dire straits, and I always feel a bit bad about making such a big generalisation. But nonetheless, for most people, if they love good food and they love being around a table with people they care about, it is one of the most delightful ways of bringing joy into your life.
Are you sensing change? We reflect a lot on the very highly processed foods that became part and parcel of our life, probably actually since the 50s in the United States, 50s and 60s, and more and more recently here. How many packet foods are, foods that have been highly processed are a part of our diets. But are you seeing quite widespread change and a real return to fresh where possible?
Well, look, I have to say that I think that there is definitely a minority in our population who are increasingly interested in eating well and in understanding where their food comes from, in supporting the splendid small providers who really push things along and do something very, very well. But I don't think we should kid ourselves that this is the mainstream thrust in the population. And that is the reason why I'm so involved with educating children. I believe that still far too many people see convenience and prepackaged as a way of coping, whereas I think the way of coping is learning how to handle fresh ingredients and being able to do it for yourself. And so that's the reason really behind the program, so that kids will grow up knowing more, being enthusiastic, and having the skills and the interest to really be independent in their food lives rather than just picking up a packet or a box or a jar.
You must have seen a generation come through, actually, because I think the foundation got it set up in 2004 and it's spread throughout Australia, and I know that it's happening here in New Zealand as well. Catherine Bell, a well-known cook and food writer here, was very involved in the program here. Are you seeing a generation of kids who are now, I don't know, at uni or in the workforce, and are we seeing some results from it?
Very hard to quantify because they sort of split into a million pieces when they leave the primary school system. But we do, whenever I visit a school, which of course has not been for a while, given COVID, I get parents come up to me, rush up to me to say how much it has meant to their children, how their kids' whole attitude towards what is cooked in the family has changed, that they like to create small gardens if they've got any space at all, and they certainly like to make suggestions when the family goes shopping. So I think anecdotally it makes a lot of difference to the lives of those kids. Whether I would never want to say something as big as we've changed the feelings of a whole generation. But look, there are hundreds of thousands of children in Australia who have now had this contact for at least 1 year of their school life. For some of them it's been 2 years. And I do believe it has to have a little trickle effect.
I was interested to read that you trained as a librarian originally and then went travelling, as a young woman, and travel and food. Well, that's two ways in which the mind is being expanded, and they're very, very correlated. But when you reflect now on this enormous life and food, what was the hook and when? Like, what was the moment where it became so central to your life and your future?
For me, there was not a moment. It was sort of, it goes back as far back as I can think, really. My mother was an exceptional cook, but not just a good cook practically. She was a very curious cook, and she was very, very interested in the fact that people all around the world did things differently and used the same sort of ingredients but produced a totally different effect or totally different dish. And she really... That was her driving passion. She was a very quiet, shy person, but she shone in the kitchen. And I just got the benefit of that from the time I can remember. And I don't think anyone made any speeches about it. But it just reinforces my really strong belief about the importance of positive modelling, not only with food, of course, but in my case, it was definitely with food, with sharing, with enjoying the process, and being able to give pleasure to other people, I think. So it was just a continuum.
France has a very special place in your heart. You were talking about what comes next and about change, but is it one of those food traditions where the essence is never lost?
Yes. Well, France was the next big influence in my life after my mother, and I do find, that what is wonderful about France, particularly in country areas, is that there's still a sense that it matters enormously to the population, and that that is taken seriously, but not, it's not grave, but it's just something that requires serious thought as to what you're going to buy for dinner, and you have a conversation with the person selling you the food, and that person understands that that's an important decision. There's all those layers of respect and understanding, and then complete pleasure when you finally sit down. It was a very, very important experience for me living in France.
You live in a country with an extraordinarily diverse population. From the mid-20th century, the absolute explosion and immigration across so many parts of the world, from so many cultures, from so many food cultures, is just extraordinary. What do you think of now as Australian cuisine?
Yeah, I think that's the only thing you can say about Australian cuisine is it's diverse. I really do think that it's not avoiding the question. I've been asked this over and over again over the last 50 years, and I always say it has to be our diversity. And it is, as you say, influenced by waves and waves of migration from, well, right back to the gold rushes, really. But it just goes on and on and on with different waves of people arriving, bringing with them their own understanding, their own ingredients. If something isn't available, they start growing it, and then it comes into the marketplace, and interested other people start saying, oh, I wonder what you do with bitter melon, or I wonder what you do with this, that and the other. And so it gradually becomes a bit more, not so much mainstream, but if you want to try almost anything, it exists.
It's one of the things I love about food and food history is it's so linked to our shared humanity, because wherever you go in the world, wherever someone writes about food in the world, someone would be influenced by someone who came through at this time in history, or who lives, I don't know, over the border, wherever the border is, and you'll see the similarities and the differences, and then you'll be able to track back to the influences and how they are shared. There are a few things that show our common humanity more.
Yes, yes, indeed. I mean, we, of course, have our original Australian food, which is another big issue here, in the sense that original Australians grew and managed to live very, very well for a very long time. And it's only been very recently that some of those ingredients have managed to get where many more people can taste them.
Is there a growing understanding, desire, respect and demand for Indigenous foods in Australia? There certainly is here.
Well, I think that the great interest, the availability is extremely limited. And that's as it should be, really, because a lot of these foods are just very seasonal. They are still foraged in the wild. Look, it's ongoing. It is ongoing. There is great interest. There are some wonderful things out there. Many of us are now tasting saltbush and things for the first time. But we've got a long way to go.
Let's talk some recipes, if you would. We are having a wonderful summer here, weather-wise. It's not always the case, and certainly not right across the country. So people are very, very grateful for that in these times. Let's get a couple of ideas from you, please. There's got to be prawns in a recipe from across the Tasman this time of year. The backsplit prawns. Now, you'll have to tell me what piccolo peppers are, please.
Piquillo peppers are a very special ingredient, which are very common to Spain, no doubt other places too, but the Spanish really love them. They're a particular variety of red pepper, sweet red pepper, like a capsicum, that's very triangular in shape, brilliantly red, scarlet in fact, and the Spanish use them in various ways. They often stuff them with a puree of salt cod and serve them just as they are. But you can buy them in Spanish and Portuguese delis, of which we have several, in a jar. And they are just like you might buy a jar of cornichon or pickled chilies or something. And they are just wonderful, very, very intense, and they're just a lovely thing to use, I just find. And they have a slight little tingle of chili, but they're not in any way scary or, you know, very chilly hot. So lovely thing to serve with prawns, and of course they look sensational on the plate because that scarlet flash is just wonderful.
Prawn head chilli butter with that as well. So we need something cooling to accompany, which brings us the melon salad with chilli, watercress and cucumber.
Right, well of course there's still a bit of chilli there, but it's only a little bit, and that really harks back to an experience I had in a small island off the coast of I'm trying to think where we were, the nearest big town, but it doesn't matter. Italy's known as Italy's Silver Coast, the coastal area in Tuscany, and I had this beautiful salad for lunch with very, very ripe, juicy melon dusted with a tiny little bit of chili powder and served with lemon juice and I brought the idea home, and I knew that it reminded me of something, and then I remembered that I had been reading Madda Jaffrey's autobiography called Climbing the Mango Tree, and there's this marvellous little image in it when she says when she was a young girl, she used to climb this mango tree in her garden and eat the green fruit, and we know that green mangoes are often used in salads, and she used to have in her pocket a little twist of paper, and in it was a mix of chilli, salt, and cumin seed, and she used to dip these chunks of green fruit in this little powder and munch on it, and was a great treat. So, you know, there's lots of, as you say, there's antecedents for any flavour combination. So my salad has got the cumin, has got the juicy melon, it's got lemon juice, got a little bit of chilli powder, and I toss it with mint leaves and watercress and a bit of rocket. Beautiful.
You've also given us a recipe, thank you for the listeners, salt and pepper calamari with fried lemon, oregano and sage. But can we talk about the duck breast grilled over salt with a summery peach salad? The summery peach salad's got my juices going. But what is the skill in cooking duck breast well, please?
Well, I think firstly it's got to be cooked skin down to the source of the heat. I usually use a very, very heavy frying pan, which I've had for 40 years, you know, one of those really thick iron pans that people used to take camping, and they can get as hot as Hades and will never buckle or anything else, never crack. So I either use one of those over a gas flame, if I'm talking restaurant cooking, or I put it over my barbecue. And you can cook the duck breast directly on the barbecue, but be warned, it will flare. And so you just need to be aware that there'll be a lot of fat that comes out of the skin. So I score the skin. I usually leave the duck breast overnight in the fridge, skin up, no cover on it, so the skin dries out. And then I rub it just with a tiny bit of olive oil, but quite firmly. And then skin down to the heat. And most of the cooking happens on that skin side. And you don't get worried if the skin looks scorched or even half black, because it doesn't, it will not taste burnt. It just, it's rendering the fat out of the skin, and probably no more than 5 minutes. And then you give it a flip for about a minute on the flesh side, take it off, let it rest for at least another 6 or 7 minutes. And then you should be able to cut lovely slices of beautifully pink duck with a nice crisp skin.
Brilliant, Stephanie. Thank you, and thanks for the recipes. Go well. Stephanie Alexander, the latest book is called Home. It includes reflections and recipes as well. There are some images on our webpage for you to check out there, and there are some links through to more information about the Garden Foundation and the recipes that we've just touched on now. It's published. I've got Macmillan Australia as the publisher, $60 the price.